Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the big show. I was going to say the State of the Union, because I know that's what everyone's really looking forward to at 9 o'clock tonight. Seth and Sean back, Sports Page Radio, Blog Talk Radio, and you know it's kind of a weird time. We're obviously a few days before the Super Bowl, and we'll talk about the Super Bowl shortly. But I think there's some other big stories that are kind of being overlooked, and we're going to talk about those as well. Mr. Palmer, welcome to the show. Weather kicking your butt as well.
Thank you. It is mighty, mighty cold out. And more to the point, I'm not getting any relief from this cold. I'm actually going into a bigger cold snowstorm up in Syracuse this weekend as I go see my beloved Orange play the Dukies in the first game at the Carrier Dome since they have joined the ACC. So very happy for that. Just got to bundle up. I hope everybody else is the same way. And speaking of bundling, 34 degrees is going to be the high on Sunday at MetLife Stadium. 34 degrees. When was this ever a good idea?
Are you asking me?
Sure, but your silence is just indicative of how much of a bad idea this is.
Yes. I mean, I've never been a fan of it. It's a city I live in. But it's not even, because it's actually in New Jersey. But they're shutting down Midtown. Will it be interesting for a week? Yeah, it'll be interesting, but I don't think it's something that needed to be done. I don't think New York City is an area that really needed the economic needed the economic development based upon this. I think
let's understand something. There is no economic benefit to this.
Yes, that's what I'm saying.
No. There is no. I don't believe that the super. Okay, you. You hear it all the time that these sporting events play a great economic impact to the city.
Oh, I don't believe it at all. I believe it's pure
evil. I don't believe it at all.
Yes, I mean, and you can see that, you know, cities like Vancouver, the Olympics, I think it's actually predicated more on the Olympics, where you have cities that have been practically financially destroyed because of this. And we'll talk about the Sochi Olympics over the next 2 weeks. But this is not, you know, it's an ego thing. There is no reason that New York City needed to have this Super Bowl. The Super Bowl should be held in a warm climate. I believe that. Or in a domed stadium. And since New York really doesn't offer either of these, I'm not quite sure why. I don't believe it was a good idea to bring the Super Bowl to New York. And if people want to talk about this or talk about anything, it's kind of an open forum this week, 760-283-0846.
Yeah, why is definitely, we know the answer to that. If you build it, it will come. I mean, that's been Roger Goodell and before him Pete Rozelle's mantra, is if you they tell the commissioner in the NFL office, tell cities, that if you pump in a whole lot of money to these stadiums, we will send a Super Bowl your way. So in the future, you're probably going to see Super Bowls, especially since the fact that this one is not going to have snow and it's not going to be icy, which is unfortunate for me because I would like to have seen this to be a total and complete disaster. But you're going to see Super Bowls in Minnesota. You're going to see a Super Bowl probably at Soldier Field in Chicago. You might see one in Cincinnati. Why, oh why, is this happening? Because if you build it, it will come. And that's the whole entire reason why there is a Super Bowl in New York or in Jersey City where I work, which is totally messing up my schedule. But, I mean, I cannot imagine with the amount of police overtime that is going into guarding the Denver Broncos Hotel, which basically looked like a war zone today, that Jersey City is in any way making money. That doesn't make any sense to me. But like Seth said, if you disagree with me, or disagree with Seth, please give us a call, 760-283-0846, or tweet us at Seth and Sean, or find us at SethandSean@gmail.com.
It's been a while since we've actually tried to get some callers, and I miss that. It's fun.
I miss it too, and let's all thank our callers that have called in the past and ask you to return to our lovely show.
So, anyway, we're now at a point that we're about 4 days short. The Super Bowl's on Sunday, and we didn't really discuss it too much last week because, to be perfectly honest, nobody needs to go over. I don't need 14 days worth of media on this. I don't need 3 days worth of media on this. And to talk about it for two of our shows would have been a waste of time. But it is time for us to talk about it. Number one offense versus number one defense. Does Peyton Manning's legacy contingent on this? Is Seattle's defense comparable to the 85 Bears, to the 2000 Ravens? There's a lot here. There's a lot riding on this. So where do you want to start?
Well, I think one of the major things that's riding on this is Seth Kamen's contention that Tom Brady is better than Peyton Manning. That certainly is something that's riding on this, because I think if Manning does win this Super Bowl, this is an argument to be had. And if he loses it and doesn't win another one, but I think it's a much stronger argument at that point. Two Super Bowls versus one, two Super Bowls versus three for Brady. So, I mean, as opposed to one. So I think it's a better argument. It's one that we will definitely have. And as per our listener, Evan Lipton, it is actually one that we will have next week on the show. Who is the greatest quarterback? And even better, we'll ask the opposite question, who is the most overrated quarterback in NFL history? Which I believe that there will be a couple of answers. And I am looking forward to Nabate Isles giving us his feedback on that, because not back and forth on who it is. No, I actually am, because, and another thing that we definitely have to discuss is on Saturday, Mr. Kamens, the NFL Hall of Fame announces its newest members. So we'll have to get into that as well. But the fact of the matter is, for me, I think that Peyton Manning's legacy does get decided this weekend if he doesn't make another Super Bowl. I think it's very interesting because the Broncos and Seattle have not played a game in the regular season since, I believe, it was 2009. And the last time that Peyton Manning saw any of these saw the Seahawks at all, none of these players were on the team. So this is a game where neither side has seen each other and the way that their teams are constructed, which I think is a great chess match. And when you have a chess match, you favor generally Peyton Manning. But to me, I don't see how Peyton Manning wins this game. I think this is Seattle's victory to be had.
Well, we'll go into that in a little while. We'll go forward with that. So why don't you elaborate a little bit more on why do you think Seattle is going to win this game?
There is no matchup that I have found that favors Denver. Zero. I think Manning versus the defense, a good defense beats a good offense any day. We've seen that in many different cases. Seattle's defense is the best in the NFL. I think in the last couple weeks they have certainly established that. They have the best secondary in the NFL. Every time that Peyton Manning needed a reception, he looked at two guys, one being Julian Thomas and the other one being Wes Walker. And the problem is most secondaries and most defenses don't have four guys that can defend all four wideouts. Well, guess what? Seattle actually does. They're the first team that I think across the board has a better secondary than the Broncos have a wide receiving core and tight end core. Cam Chancellor is 6'3". Julian Thomas is 6'3". They match up. Nobody's had an answer for Julian Thomas all year when he's healthy. Well, guess what? Here's Cam Chancellor. Here's Earl Thomas. Here's Walter Drummond. Here's Richard Sherman. We haven't even gotten into Maxwell. the Nickelback.
Richard who? Never heard of him.
I'm sorry?
Richard who? Never heard of him.
Oh, Richard who, yeah. You know the best quarterback in the NFL, my country! Yeah, that Richard Sherman. They are the best secondary in the NFL. They may be the best defense in the NFL, and they may be the best defense that I've seen since the Ravens. They're that good. It starts up front with Red Bryant and Bruce Irvin, and it continues in the linebacking core, and it all starts with Earl Thomas. So I think that they have four Pro Bowlers across the back in the secondary, and I don't think Denver has an answer to them, and I want Peyton Manning to win this. The head says definitely Seattle, and the heart says Peyton Manning. So I'm going with the head and hoping that Peyton can prove me wrong.
This is about, and I said this about last year's Super Bowl as well, although I think everyone kind of felt Baltimore was somewhat destined last year. I don't feel a destined pick this year. And I find this a really difficult – I find this a much more difficult game to pick, to be honest, because I don't like how Seattle's offense has been playing in a lot of ways. And I also – I almost kind of wonder if the deciding factor of this game is not the Denver offense versus Seattle defense, but the Seattle offense versus Denver defense. Denver is allowed – What did you say?
I didn't hear you. I think you just said the same thing twice.
I think that this deciding factor would be Seattle's offense versus Denver's defense. If I did, then I apologize.
Gotcha. Okay.
For as much as Denver defense has kind of had a bad rap, do you know how many 100-yard rushers they've allowed this year? One.
I would say probably one.
One. That's what I just said. One. Ryan Matthews. In a meaningless game 15 against San Diego. I don't like the way Russell Wilson has played the last couple, although he was better against San Francisco. One of the big questions for me is how much is Percy Harvin going to be useful? How healthy is Percy Harvin? Despite the Hall of Fame tendencies of Doug Baldwin, Golden Tate, you know, they have a decent set of wide receivers, but not one which scares anybody. I think Denver's going to be able to hold them to about 17 to 20 points. So pretty much what I'm looking at is I'm realistically looking at a 24-20 game in either direction. Because I do think Denver will be – I think it's relative that Seattle will be able to hold Denver. Denver scored more points than anyone in the history of the NFL this season. They're running, their pass defense is, Seattle's pass defense is world class. Sherman and Thomas could be the two best secondary players in the NFL. Cam Chancellor is very good. We don't need to discuss this. We've seen this ad nauseum. I really think that the things we're looking at, number one, can Denver stop or at least handle Marshawn Lynch? And number two is the weather issue. And if the weather holds what it looks like it's going to, it'll be cold. But to be perfectly honest, both teams play in cold weather anyway, so it doesn't really make much of a difference. I mean, Denver plays in Mile High. Seattle plays in that pseudo dome, but the weather is often pretty crappy. As you can see, I've really had trouble trying to figure out who I'm picking in this game. I don't really have a rooting interest. I kind of like both teams, and I find both teams pretty easy to root for. Sherman's entertaining to me. Russell Wilson's incredibly likable. I do think Denver. At the end of the day, do I think Seattle's the better team? Yes. Do I think they win the game? Denver 24-20.
See, here's the thing. I understand that Denver hadn't given up a 100-yard rusher. I get that. But they also had Von Miller the entire year. Until the last
year. Not the entire
games.
Year.
No,
he was out the first 6 weeks of the season.
Oh, that's right. I forgot about that. My bad. Forgot he was suspended this year. That was this year. Yeah, my bad. And I am wrong. Yes, you heard it here. You heard it here. Navate, are you listening? I am wrong. Anyway. The Denver defense, you're right. There's a lot riding on that. But the fact is that there is still going to be weather. And even if it holds off, the winds of MetLife Stadium are not winds that you see anywhere else. I think you're going to see a lot of flutter balls if Manning is thrown.
From both sides.
And that's,
yeah.
What's that?
I see it from both sides, yes.
Yeah. And when it comes right down to it, to me, it's who's got the better running game? And the better running game in bad weather, to me, is Marshawn Lynch, hands down. He's a better runner than Knowshon Moreno. Knowshon Moreno was nothing before Peyton Manning. Marshawn Lynch has been grinding it out in Buffalo for the last 5 years, and then came over to Seattle and had three of the most punishing years of running I've ever seen, including the best run I have ever seen against New Orleans a couple of years back, which I think he took on the entire team and the mascot on his way down to the end zone. There's no better runner to me in cold weather and bad weather than Marshawn Lynch. So that's why I'm picking Seattle. Now, I could see where you're going with this, and I could see that it will come down to whether Russell Wilson can do stuff and whether Percy Harvin can do stuff. I get that. I just don't see it being that simple for them. I don't see Manning scoring. And if Manning's not scoring, I don't think it matters. I think the only way that Manning wins this game is if he puts up at least 28 points. And that means he's basically solved the Seattle defense, which has not been solved this year. But you know what? Stranger things have happened. Look, Peyton Manning lost the last Super Bowl he was in, and nobody thought that was going to happen. So definitely possible, and it would be interesting if John Fox tried an onside kick in the second half.
It's a game to look forward to. These are two teams, as you said, you can make arguments legitimately either way. Denver, as I said, scored the most points, I believe, in the history of the NFL this season. Peyton Manning threw the most touchdowns in the history of the NFL this year. They have four receivers, I think, with 10 touchdowns. You know, Peyton Manning is the most intellectual quarterback of our generation. You know, possibly of all time. If anyone is going to figure out a way to...
Seth, I'm with you, but and I get that, okay? And I get all that. But I had an interesting thing that I just looked up. Let's hear the opponents that Peyton Manning played this year and show me more than one very good defense, okay? He played Baltimore in the opening game. Adequate defense. Not good defense, not this year. He played the Giants. We all know about that. He played Oakland. He played Philly. He played Dallas.
Average.
He played Jacksonville.
Average.
He played Indianapolis.
Decent.
He played Indianapolis. He played the Redskins. He played next was the Chargers.
He played the Chargers and the Chiefs, and both the Chargers and the Chiefs are pretty good defense. I understand your point.
Okay, pretty good defense. He played New England, not a good defense. He played Tennessee.
Pretty good defense. Well, I mean,
Houston, and Oakland. So when say that you put up the most yards in NFL history, that's fantastic. He threw for 5,477 yards this year. He averaged 8.31 yards per throw. Fantastic. But he didn't have great defenses playing against him. He didn't even have good defenses playing against him. When he played the NFC, he didn't have a good defense playing against him. He had Dallas, the Giants, the Redskins, and the Eagles. I understand you play the defenses that are in front of you, but the fact that he had a great year doesn't necessarily mean that it was a great year compared to other great years.
But I guess when I said in this year, in this kind, almost in this era, what great defenses really are there? I mean, you have Seattle is fantastic. San Francisco is very good. Carolina and Cincy. Who else is really a good defense? Everybody's
well, the Jets are a good defense. They may not have any offense whatsoever, but the Jets are an actually very good defense.
David, yes, I agree. They're a good defense. Not a great defense, but
okay. They're
a good defense.
So who else is a good defense? I mean, Arizona, good defense.
Okay. No, I mean,
St. Louis is a good defense.
So you're seeing the NFC West, and I understand that. And I completely I think the Seattle is the easier argument. I think Seattle player to player is probably a better team. I don't know if I'm going with my head or a gut. With my heart or my gut. And I don't really have I'd like to see Manning win, but I don't have it, considering, as you said, it does weaken my argument that Brady's a better quarterback. I'm not quite sure where exactly we go with it. And, you know, the problem is, even if he wins this, it's a little bit harder when you look at the team that he has surrounding him with the talent is over freaking whelming. I don't know. You know, it kind of reminds me of the teams in Indianapolis with two Hall of Famers and two other All Pros. So it's the same argument I've been making for years. But I can. It's very easy to see the Seattle argument. I think I'm surprised that Denver is the favorite in this game. It started off, I think, as Seattle. Now it's Denver. But I almost wonder if that's people voting with their heart, because they were so pissed off about the whole thing that happened with Sherman. And I realize that's a ridiculous reason to bet. But we both know that there are stranger things that happen.
That's a ridiculous way to think. It's not even a ridiculous way to bet.
Well, people are stupid. Not, of course, people who listen to our show. But
no, and of
people
course not
stupid.
The hosts of our show. I mean, why would we be stupid?
Yeah.
We're just wrong.
Yeah, because God knows we've never said anything stupid on this show before.
Never.
As I said, the argument for Seattle is easier, but I do think this is the game. The argument is easier, but I just have a gut feeling that Denver pulls this out, and I think it'll be a very good game. And I don't think it's an unreal. It's not picking, it's not picking the Giants over the Ravens in 2000, or it's not that kind of upset. It's not even an upset. Denver's favored in the game.
I want to see a game that matters in the fourth quarter. That's all I want. I want a game where I'm not turning it off, or a game that I'm not watching strictly for the commercials in the fourth quarter. I want a game that I'm actually interested in. And I think that this will bring that game. I mean, if nothing else, you never count out Peyton Manning. And Seattle has the wherewithal to come back. I think if Seattle falls behind early, I think they're in for a major problem. I do think they have the ability to come back. However, it takes a lot more for them. So if Denver races out to a lead, I think they're definitely in the driver's seat. As opposed to Seattle races out to a lead, I think Manning has the capability to come back a whole lot easier.
I agree. Say what you want about Denver's offense, it's certainly quick strike. Seattle is more of a grind out offense. And we've been joking about Doug Baldwin over the last 2 weeks, and we'll explain that next week. But the receivers are competent, but certainly they don't scare you like the receivers in Denver do. And, it'll be fascinating to watch Sherman versus Demaryius Thomas, to watch Cam Chancellor versus Julius Thomas. We'll know Sean Moreno, because Seattle's going to have to play, pretty much a nickel defense in a lot of the game. Let's open up the rushing lanes, or open up screen passes for Noshon or for Ronnie Hillman or Monty Ball. There's a lot there, and I'm curious to see what Adam Gase is going to come up with. I'm curious to see what Dan Quinn on the defensive side is going to come up with. And just think about it. 20 years ago, Pete Carroll was the coach of the New York Jets, being fired after a 6-10 season in which they were in the playoff hunt with two games. I didn't realize this. They pulled a Jadinski on him. He only coached 1 year for the Jets.
They did. They did. Thank you for playing, and have a good day.
Because Rich Kotite was obviously going to be the answer.
Thank you for playing, and have a good day. Are we done yet? We done yet?
Yeah.
All right. So move on to our Hall of Fame balloting, because I think that this is important. This is coming up this week. We had a nice roundtable discussion between myself, Nabal Pals, and Mr. Kamens last week about these nominees, but we did not express those on this show, and I think it's important to note that Doug Baldwin is not eligible this year, so he cannot be voted in just yet. Wait till after the Super Bowl, maybe after that. So the Hall of Fame nominees, and we were clouded as to who the two senior nominees were. So these are the two senior nominees, and Seth, you tell me if you're in for one or in for both, because you can vote for both. Claude Humphrey, who was named the Rookie of the Year in 1968 with the Falcons, played 6 Pro Bowls, made a Super Bowl in 1980 as a member of the Eagles. Defensive end. Do you even know who Claude Humphrey is?
I've heard of him, but I don't know enough about him to vote for him.
All right, so that would be a no. I'd vote no as well. Number two, one of the polarizing figures of the Hall of Fame vote next to Art Monk. This guy symbolizes everything that special teams should be. Played for the Oakland and L.A. Raiders, 1973 and 1986. Ray Guy became the first punter ever drafted in the first round. You will never see a punter drafted in the first round again because Al Davis has passed away. Over 14 seasons. Well, am I wrong?
Yeah, no, that's where I was going to go with it. You're right.
You won't see a kicker in the first round either, and because Al Davis has passed away. Over 14 seasons, he was named to the Pro Bowl 7 times, played in 3 Super Bowls. Ray Guy, in or out?
Do I think he should be in, or do I think he gets in?
Both.
I would not vote him in. I think he gets in.
Okay, I don't think he gets in, and I think he actually deserves to get it. So I'll go the other way. So you are going 1 for 2. You believe Guy gets in, so 1 out of 2. I believe neither of the seniors get in. Okay. Now, remember, modern nominees, you get 5 of these guys. Okay? And most of us know who these guys are, so I'm not going to go through their bios. But the first one is Morton Anderson, the kicker. Is he in or out?
He's not in. He's out.
Okay. Now, let me ask you this. When you say he's out, is he out? And because you only get 5, I would like you to say whether he's out for this year or he's out. Because
he's out.
This is a very big nominee pool. So
yes,
you don't think he ever gets in. He's out.
No, I do not. I think if you're going to get in as a kicker, punter, special team player, I think you have to be unequivocally the best. I don't think Morton Anderson was. He was very, very good, but there was nothing. Adam Vinatieri goes in because of some of the kicks that he made, some of the greatest clutch kicks of all time. I think that will get him in. That will catapult him in. Morton Anderson, unfortunately, was never really in that position. And it's despite being one of the best kickers of all time, I don't think he gets in.
Okay, you do know he's the all-time leading scorer in NFL history, right?
I'm not surprised. I knew he would be in the top 5. I didn't know where.
Okay. All right. Jerome Bettis. He is 6th all-time in the all-time career rushing list. And what was interesting was his old coach, Bill Cowher, threw every single quarterback that he ever played with under the bus today when he said, "Have you seen the quarterbacks that Jerome Bettis played with?" And I was like, then I went back and looked at him. Played with Tommy Maddox. Played with Bobby Brister. I think that's factual. So is Jerome Bettis in?
He does not get in this year. He does eventually get in.
Okay. I don't think he gets in this year. I don't think he deserves to get in, but I do think he does get in. Yeah, he definitely doesn't get in this year.
He is, again, the Hall of very good. But I never thought of him as a great back. I never thought of him as one of the best backs in the league. He's not an all-time great to me. He's not a Hall of Famer in my mind.
Derek Brooks, 9-time Pro Bowler.
He gets in. I'm going to put him – he gets in at some point. I'm going to put him to the side until I hear the rest of the grouping to see whether he gets – I vote for him this year.
Okay. I have unequivocally supported Derek Brooks. I think he's the best linebacker of his generation outside of Ray Lewis. I don't think there's – and he may have been better than Ray Lewis. He was just a whole lot quieter. I think he's a backbone of that championship team, no doubt. Okay, one of our favorite people to discuss, maybe not you and me, but certainly me and the Bate, Tim Brown.
Tim Brown does not get in. He does get in at some point.
I don't think Tim Brown ever gets in. I don't think he deserves to get in. You can listen to the podcast of me and the Bate for my rationale. Don't think he gets in. Ed DeBartolo Jr.
Never gets in.
Is this because of the gambling?
Yes.
Okay.
And you can say all you want whether it belongs in there or not, but the reality is it's out there.
I agree, and I don't think he gets in either. I think it is very hard for you to get a builder into the Hall of Fame because they are grouped with, or coach, because they are grouped with the players. I think you need a down year in the Hall of Fame to get somebody in like this. And I don't think he ever gets that down a year. Speaking of guys that probably will get in at some point but won't get in this year for me, Tony Dungy. And I don't think Tony Dungy deserves to get in at all.
I actually understand the argument, and he's iffy to me, to be perfectly honest. He was, very, very good coach, first black coach to win a Super Bowl, to my generation, I'm not quite sure because I'm not quite sure of the importance of it from that respect anymore. Great defensive coordinator, successful coach with Tampa, obviously winning the title in Indy. Didn't coach for long enough. I think he only was a head coach for about 10 years. I think he will get in. I'm iffy on whether he should. I would not vote for him this year.
He only coached for 12 years. That's part of the reason why I don't get him in. I think if you're going to use the concept that he's the first African-American to win a Super Bowl and that's why he gets in, I understand it. I don't agree with it because Tom Flores isn't it. And Tom Flores is the first Hispanic to win a Super Bowl, and he won two. He's not in. Okay, Kevin Green.
No.
Third all-time in NFL and all-time sacks.
No.
Member of the 1990s All-Decade Team. No,
no
for now, no for today, no forever.
No into perpetuity. Very good.
I agree with you. I think he did something very good. I think he was a great sack artist. That's it. One-dimensional player to me. Charles Haley, the only player to win 5 Super Bowls.
Oof. I haven't voted anyone in yet, except for Tim.
No, you
Brown.
Haven't.
No,
now,
I haven't.
There are
haven't.
A lot of good players coming up, so
I'm going to put Haley to the side.
Okay. I actually say no.
I think he will get in. I don't think he deserves to get in. A great, but yet one-dimensional guy.
See, but with him, I don't see him as one-dimensional. I don't see him as Kevin Green. I really don't. I see him as a much better player against the run.
I don't see him as a great defensive player against the run. I see the difference being he won 5 championships.
Well, that's certainly true. Some of that has to come into play to me. But, okay, I think Haley gets in. I'm counting my votes right here. I don't think he gets in this year. but I do think he gets it. The next two, I think you and I will both agree, are first ballots, Marvin Harrison and Walter Jones.
Walter Jones, yes. Marvin Harrison, yes.
Yeah, I don't think there's any. I don't think there's any doubt to me. Walter Jones is the best tackle I've ever seen. I know you're going to put Ogden up there, and I'll put him with Ogden. But
fair enough.
Best tackle I've ever seen. And Marvin Harrison, well, Marvin Harrison has the stats. And that, to me, while you're looking at Andre Reed and you're looking at Tim Brown, I think Marvin Harrison was, at one time, probably one of the two or three best wide receivers in football, and I don't put Tim Brown or Andre Reed in there.
Well, who did you – I think that's difficult because the top two wide receivers in football were two of the four or five best of all time. The people that what do you call it, that compete – I wouldn't put Moss and Owens, who I assume are the top two that you're thinking of at that level.
Yep.
You know, Jerry Rice is, at worst, the second best wide receiver of all time. Most likely the best. It's hard to argue Don Hutson. You know, Michael Irvin is the best player on three Dallas Cowboy championship teams. Possibly, surprisingly, and considering my feelings on the Cowboys, shockingly underrated as a wide receiver, I think.
Yeah, but I think Terrell Owens over Michael Irvin.
Okay. I wouldn't.
So,
but,
and I take Randy Moss over Michael Irvin, too. So I might take Chris Carter over Michael Irvin.
I probably wouldn't.
Okay.
But anyway, we're kind of going off topic a little bit.
Okay, so the next one, speaking of which, is Andre Reed.
Not now. 50-50 to me whether he should get in. I think he will get in at some point. I think he gets in a down year.
I agree. He gets in a down year, but it better be soon. Because if it's not, you're going to have – do you know Wes Welker has more catches than Andre Reed right now? And that's not right now. It's going to be forever because Andre Reed's retired.
Well, thank you for clarifying that.
You're welcome. Soon these guys are going to get eclipsed, and they're going to have to go to the senior ballot. The only way that Andre Reed gets in to me is if a guy like Peter King puts his word up and says this guy needs it like he did Art Monk. Okay. I think the next guy we can both agree is not going anywhere in, and that's John Lynch.
No, not a good player. Not even very good. Good player. Not great.
Well,
I don't think of him as very good.
John Lynch was a very good player. He was a 9-time Pro Bowler.
I'm surprised he was that high. Okay. I can live a very good, but not a great player, not a Hall of Fame player.
Okay. Now, the next guy I think is probably one of the more underrated players, and I think a lot of it is because he's a guard, and that's Will Shields. And to me, Will Shields is in, 12-time Pro Bowler, in, no doubt.
I agree. I would vote Will Shields in as well.
Okay, I have hit my five.
Okay, what am I at, three?
The last two you are going to say are in because we've had this conversation. Now, I said I thought Haley was going to go in. I don't think he'll go in this year. I think Strahan will go in this year. I don't think Strahan deserves to go in at all.
You and Warren Sapp apparently have a lot in common. As Warren Sapp
has
said.
Well, we're both egotistical guys, so I get that.
Yeah, that's about all you have in common. And that you have the letter A in your first name, and E, I guess, and N.
And my last name.
There you go. I do think Strahan gets in this year. Does he deserve it? I think so. But I also may be a little bit biased being a Giant fan. Great pass rusher, very solid against the run, great pass rusher, set the record. Excuse me, for all-time sacks in a season, and whether you want to debate whether it was I was getting there. Whether you want to dispute whether the last sack was legitimate or not is perfectly fair. But it was in the third quarter. He may have sacked him anyway. And at a minimum, I think one of the two or three best defensive ends of his generation. So I think he's in. And I know the last one, if I remember correctly, and I don't have the list in front of me, is Steve Tasker.
No, it's Aeneas Williams.
Oh, did we vote on Steve Tasker?
Steve Tasker did not make it this year to the finalists.
Okay. Aeneas Williams, yes, in my mind, Aeneas Williams is a Hall of Famer. The probably one, again, one of the two or three best cornerbacks of his generation. Kind of the problem being stuck nowhere land down in Arizona for the crux of his career. Probably, I'm guessing, around a 7 or 8 time All-Star. But
he
when
was
I thought of
8-time Pro Bowler. Well done.
When I thought of best, when I think of best cornerbacks in the NFL over the 2000s, the mid late 90s, 2000s, the names that come to mind, you know, he's one of the names that comes to mind. So I would vote him in. So yeah,
Let me recap yours: Aeneas Williams, Will Shields, Michael Strahan, Walter Jones, and Marvin Harrison.
Not a bad five.
Mine are Derek Brooks, Marvin Harrison, Walter Jones, Will Shields. Did I have somebody else? I said Haley would get in.
Yeah.
Well, I think Strahan's going to get in. I think Haley should. So
you think Haley was a better defensive end than Strahan?
I do.
Okay.
I think he was. And we both agree that Ray Guy probably will. You would think that Ray Guy will get in, although he shouldn't. And I think Ray Guy will get in, but should. So maybe we'll both be happy with Ray Guy.
So anyway,
that takes us to a Hall of Fame discussion. Doug Baldwin on for another week of the Hall of Fame topic. We'll see what he does in the Super Bowl. But we have two more topics that we should discuss. We might not get to both of them. But the more important and the more timely one is the fact that arguably, most influential and best commissioner of all time is retiring this week after 30 years. David Stern is stepping down with his glorious hair and thankfully no mustache anymore. And Adam Silver is taking over his role, who is much taller, has the same type of glasses, but has no hair.
Much less hair.
So it's the changing of the guard, and you don't hear about it very often because it's been so open and honest, unlike what Bud Selig is going to go through next year. What do you remember most about David Stern and his legacy?
Stern was both extraordinarily good at what he did and came in at the perfect time. He took over for a nothing commissioner in Lawrence, I forget the last name.
Lawrence O'Brien. Larry
O'Brien, thank you, in 84. And 84, and you have to remember, in the late 70s, early 80s, the NBA was nothing. It wasn't, the games were tape delayed. The NBA, you didn't see Game 6 of the 80 Finals, where Magic, as a rookie, did a triple-double playing as center because Kareem was injured. Unless you stayed up till 11:30 at night to watch the game. Now, in retrospect, I would have obviously been up that late because I never sleep. But for most of the populace, not particularly helpful. So this is how bad the NBA reputation was. Then, in 84, that guy from North Carolina came in. And he suddenly had a triumvirate of Bird, Johnson, and Michael. Magic and Michael in two huge areas, huge cities, metropolises, and Larry Bird in the biggest professional basketball metropolis there is in Boston. And the game grew and it grew and it grew. And it went from a place without a TV deal with a huge, huge substance abuse problem to a time where now you have a business generating more than $5 billion annually. The average salary is over $4 million. You have a billion a year tax deal. tax deal, excuse me, TV rights deal. I mean, basketball has grown exponentially overseas. In my mind, and I saw that they came out with the sports rankings for the best, who is the most popular sports in the U.S., done by the Harris Poll. And I think it's a joke, to be perfectly honest. You know, they have baseball as number two. I don't even know how that's possible. In my mind, the NBA is the second most popular.
I think for the U.S., that may very well be true. I think when you go worldwide, there's no chance.
Okay, well, we can discuss that either later on or next week. But regardless, David Stern has been, you know, for better or for worse, the driving force behind all this. And he is leaving the NBA in extraordinarily better shape than when he came in.
Yeah, absolutely no doubt. To me, David Stern is all about internationalization of basketball. No, you're right. He did come in at the perfect time. No question.
I don't think – did Syracuse teach you the word internationalization? Can you just use globalization like everybody else?
There you go. Globalization. No, because I'm special.
Yes, you are. You are special.
So anyway, the globalization of the NBA was certainly on David Stern's watch. No question about it. But I think the biggest thing that he ever did was petition for the NBA players to be in the Olympics, for the Dream Team to come about. Because before the Dream Team, you had your Magic, you had your Michael, and that was all well and good in the U.S. And you had this sporadic player like the Drazen Petrovic, who came over in 92, or I think in 89, actually. And you had Alexander Volkov, who came over, and he was the Atlanta Hawk that came over. And you had a couple of sporadic players from Yugoslavia and Russia come over. But now, due to that one team, due to the fact that David Stern pushed for the globalization, for Michael Jordan to become a brand globally, basketball has totally changed and is more of a international sport in the NBA than ever before or ever since. And that's the biggest thing to me that he brought to the table. Without him, Michael doesn't get the McDonald's commercials. Michael doesn't get the Kobe Bryant is not a hero in China. Tracy McGrady is not able to go over and play in China, neither was Stephon Marbury. Not that Stephon Marbury really needed to go into China, but at the same point, he did win a championship over there. So the fact is, without him, basketball is a U.S. sport, U.S.-centric sport. The NBA is a U.S.-centric league. Now, I wouldn't be the least bit surprised if within 10 years you get a team in London.
Now, let me ask you something. Because I kind of want to before you kind of go further down the line, you talked about the Dream Team in 92. Now, how much of that do you think was done because of the wanting for globalization of the NBA and because it was the last chance you had of Magic and Michael? Magic obviously had retired earlier because of the AIDS virus. Larry was on his last legs. And how much of it was because of nationalistic pride because the college team in 88 got whipped by the professionals overseas? Or does it even matter?
Well, I think it was probably a little bit of both, no doubt. However, David Stern was the one pushing for this. So did it matter whether it was for globalization or for nationalistic pride? He saw it perhaps as both. So one way or another, he got what he wanted. I think much like the 1980 Olympic team where you have a coach that is looking for just to win, but you have people behind the scenes looking at the bigger picture, I think that was very similar here. You had a coach, who Chuck Daly and the team, that were looking to win, but you had David Stern, who has always seen the bigger picture in everything he's done. So I mean, when you think about it, the NBA was the last real sport to get on the internet bandwagon. They really were. But now they're the biggest one. So he rectified that. When David Stern cleaned up the image of the NBA because he didn't want thugs playing in the NBA. He actually said no to straight out of high school because he saw that there were problems with players coming straight out of high school. He wanted 1 year of college. He wanted the NBA DL. NBA, the developmental league. He's the one that spearheaded all that. So I think David Stern, granted he's a lawyer, so I kind of probably give him a little bit more credit than he probably deserves, but the fact is he was looking always at the bigger picture. I think even in 1992 he saw that.
He will be missed, especially at the NBA draft where he gets booed so perpetually. So, and we'll see what happens onward, you know, outward and onward, or onward and outward, with Adam Silver, who apparently his father was actually worked with Stern at Proskauer Rose before he joined the NBA. Small world.
So yep.
We got about 7 minutes left, 8 minutes left. We were going to talk about the college football union that was formed by Northwestern players today, but I don't think we really have enough time to go into that. I think that's more than a 5 minute conversation. So the thing I kind of want to hit on, I mentioned it. What did you say?
I said probably so.
Yeah. I kind of wanted to mention this because I found this interesting. The Harris poll has been gauging adult sports fans since 1985. And for the 30th straight year, pro football ranked number one. I do find this poll, I find this a little bit shocking. The rankings are pro football number one, Major League Baseball at pro football 35%, Major League Baseball 14%, college football 11%, auto racing 7%, the NBA 6%, the NHL 5%, college basketball 3%, and golf 2%. I am shocked, to be perfectly honest, that Major League Baseball is still number two.
What's the poll based on? I mean, a poll is only as good as and the rankings are only as good as what the criteria is. So what do they say? Harris is saying 14% of what? Say what?
Say that 14% of the adult fans that they surveyed, and I'm looking up the number of fans that were surveyed. It may not be enough to be relevant. Consider Major League Baseball their favorite sport.
Okay. That can't be true. If they're saying Major League Baseball is their favorite sport, or they follow Major League Baseball more, because when you say Major League Baseball, remember what you just said. You said NBA, you're using the major sports leagues. You're not using the sport. Do you understand what I'm saying? So if you say, if you combine
Major League
college
basketball
and pro basketball, that would be all of basketball.
They separate it out. This is the Major League Baseball.
Right. So what I'm saying is that, so they're saying identify the sports league which you probably follow the most. That's the only way I can see that poll working.
Okay. You're splitting hairs. But
because I think a lot of that has to do with fantasy sports. There is no fantasy college basketball. There is fantasy baseball. I think a lot of people play fantasy baseball. And I think when you get right down to it, that's probably where this poll is getting judged the most. I don't think I'm splitting hairs. I really don't, because if you say to an American male, what league do you follow the most? And if you pose it that way, most people are not going to say college sport.
Well, college football ranked 11%.
Yeah. But what your criteria is, you can't believe that the NBA was so low. right? That's what you
were
saying.
I find that shocking.
Okay, I don't, because I think a lot of people are just fed up with the NBA. How many NBA games have you watched this year?
Not many.
Okay.
But
and
I watch even less. I watch even less baseball.
Well, but I guess what I'm saying is there are 162 baseball games in a year. I think people probably watch more baseball than they do the NBA over the course of a year. And that may be the other criteria. They may say, you know what? What sports league did you watch the most? When you have 162 as opposed to others.
And if that's the criteria, then the whole poll is ridiculous.
Agreed.
Because then baseball should win every time.
Which
because
is
there's
what
10 times more
baseball. With, isn't it?
I'm saying that baseball being ranked number two is ridiculous.
Right. So the question is, how did that come to be?
Fair enough. All right, we only got 3 minutes to go. We only have 3 minutes, so you can start.
I can start. Kudos to all of the kudos to the policemen and policewomen that are working in New York this week, because I wouldn't want to be in this cold, and they're doing a great job with the Super Bowl in town, and shame on the NFL for putting a Super Bowl in this cold city and basically asking every New Yorker to get out of town this weekend, which I will be doing.
Are you going to be back for the game or no? Or are you still going to be up in Syracuse?
I will be back. I will be back at around 4 o'clock on Sunday, so I will be back for the game. Prediction for me is 28-20 Seattle. And we have a prediction from our beloved fan, Evan Lipton, which I'll get to when that's done.
There's only about a minute left, so I don't really have too much for people to say. Congratulations to Stan Wawrinka, actually, winning the Australian Open, beating Novak Djokovic and Rafael Nadal in the same tournament. Pretty amazing performance. And we've been, you know, he's been someone who's been on the precipice for a long time. We've been waiting for someone to challenge the Murray, Federer, Djokovic, Nadal. And over the last year, he's really put on some great performances, including one of my matches of the year against Djokovic last year in both the U.S. and Australian Open. So congratulations to him.
Okay, so 28-21 Denver is Evan Lipton's prediction. Next week we'll have Evan on the show to discuss the greatest quarterback ever, because he has some comments in his own right.
I think that's it for this week. Everyone enjoy the Super Bowl. And for Sean Palmer, Seth Kamens, Seth and Sean Sports Radio Show on Back Sports Page Radio, blogtalkradio.com. Good night, everybody.
See ya.